Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more and find the store nearest to you.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, Internet Radio, this is Food Book Fair. I'm Kimberly Chow.
I'm Amanda Dell.
We are the co-directors of Food Book Fair, a biannual festival of writing about eating. And we're also the co-hosts of Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair, where we talk about what we are reading, watching, and listening to.
And as always, we are broadcasting from Heritage Radio Network in the back of Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
We're so happy to be joined in studio today with the founder of Bushwick Kitchen, Casey Elsass. We're going to be talking to him about being a big, big opera stan, what he's making in the kitchen, what he listens to, when he makes things in the kitchen. But first, Amanda, what are you listening to or watching or reading?
Well, this segment for me of reading is going to be a little bit more of a preview because I just received this book in the mail this morning. I couldn't be more excited. As soon as it came out in paperback, I had to click on that purchase. The book that I am referring to, which I have only read a few pages of but have been long awaiting, is called They Call Me Supermensch, and it's by Shep Gordon. And then the next line that gives a little preview of it is a backstage pass to the amazing worlds of film, food, and rock and roll. So Shep Gordon is kind of like a super agent. He's worked with musicians. There was a documentary about him. Then he started working with some food people. For people who know me a little bit and for people who don't, I will let you know and confirm that I do have a fascination with mensches. And I'm always looking for them, and my eyes are always open for wherever they may be congregating. So if there was a book called Supermensch, I was instantly attracted to it and can't wait to dive into it. So I think I'll probably be reading it on the train and everywhere that I can. I got to read a couple pages of it, and if this is any sort of look into what's going to come into the, that's going to be in the book, I'm very excited. Basically, Shep gets to California. It's 1968. He's coming from New York. He doesn't know where to stay. He doesn't know what to do. He pulls into the Landmark Motor Hotel. And he gets a room and he's like, oh, I have enough money to stay here for a couple of weeks. So I'll figure it out. And then that night he says he walks onto the balcony of his room and he hears like a woman's cries of being in distress. And so he runs over and tries to like break up what he thought was, like two people fighting. And it was actually Janis Joplin and they were actually having sex.
Amazing.
So that's just the first couple of pages that I read. So Supermensch, I'm really looking forward to diving into you.
Wow.
And yeah, it should be an interesting read. I think it's just, you know, though it could be like some real insight into like the wild, wild west of California and LA, like in the late 60s and early 70s.
Can't wait for the book report.
I'll be giving a full book report at some point. And then the other thing that really got me excited lately was the Gloria Allred documentary on Netflix.
Perhaps you mean Seeing Allred?
Yes. Clever title. Have you watched it?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Highly recommend. Super lawyer, super person, gets very personal in the documentary about her motivations for why she has gravitated towards women's rights issues, civil rights issues, LGBTQ, you know, issues, all of those. And you really get an understanding of why she's passionate about that and what an incredible person she is.
Cool.
So, loved it.
That's on Netflix?
It is. Get it in your queue.
Something else I've got in my queue. This is a Netflix ad, but, you know, call us. I just watched Tambourine, the new Chris Rock comedy special. It's really good.
Watched just the beginning of it until I fell asleep.
I also highly recommend. I don't know. I was like, I was trying to be like, I'm a bit of a skeptic, so I was like trying not to like get too into it, you know, but then I was like laughing against my will. That's good.
I think it's a little outside of your, what you usually recommend.
Yeah. I'm a fan. I'm not going to give anything away. And
not going to give the ending away.
Yeah, I'm not going to give the ending away. There's definitely a really great Prince shout out for the, but you kind of need to be a deep Prince fan to get that. But if anybody
you
does,
are.
Yeah, I am. So there's like an Easter egg in the credits. And if you know anything about Prince and his music rights, you know, this is a big deal. So, you know, watch it for that. But also it's very funny.
Wow.
Lots of good relationship advice. Lessons learned.
Things we can learn
from. Chris Rock. Okay. Chris Rock and his reflections on his previous relationships.
And Tambourine, what is the title? What is that about?
I don't think this is a giveaway. And okay. By the time this episode airs, I think a lot of people will have seen this, especially because it's advertised so heavily on Netflix right now. Sometimes in relationships, you got to play different roles. You don't always get to sing lead. Sometimes you got to play the tambourine. Mm. He goes off on that a lot more in a way that will be funnier than I ever will. So you'll just have to watch it. If you need my password, you can also call me.
I got my own.
Okay.
Does he talk about any food stuff in it?
No.
Oh.
No. As a metaphor. Bad apples as a metaphor.
Okay. Hey, Chris Rock, if you're listening, come on Recommended Reading and tell us what's on your nightstand. If you're out there listening, we have one fan of Tambourine and one eagerly awaiting watching it.
Just watch it and then we can talk about it.
Sounds good.
In the meantime, we got someone else in studio with us. It's Casey Elsass. Perhaps you know his delicious spicy honey bee's knees or tree's knees or weak knees, various delicious and spicy condiments that he makes with Bushwick Kitchen. Welcome.
Hey,
welcome
friends.
To the show,
Thank
Casey.
You. I'm happy to be here.
Excellent.
What has been on your nightstand or wherever you keep your mixed media?
Well, I just got back from Mexico, so
nice.
On my nightstand while I was gone was a book of crossword puzzles that my mom got me for Christmas.
Delightful.
Yeah. Wow. I always feel like I go on vacation, I bring a book, I don't touch the book.
Right.
So this time I thought, let's try something new and not bring a book.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked out well.
Shout out to mom using your actual Christmas present.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. My mom's a good shopper, actually.
Okay, great.
Cool.
But on my nightstand back here in Bushwick, I took a trip upstate a couple weekends ago. And my friend Bill introduced me to the store that I'm obsessed with, called Book Barn in Hillsdale, New York.
Wow.
It's an old converted barn. And it's wintertime now, so we only got in the barn part of it. But I guess during warmer months, they also have an annex next to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then just a bin outside of books they don't want anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's just like so huge. Mm-hmm. And every genre of everything.
Wow.
And we were probably in there for 2 hours easily, just wandering around, picking out books. I mean, if you like to look and touch and read things, it's heaven. So anyways, I found two books there that I was so excited about.
Mm-hmm.
Raymond Carver, a short story writer who I've always been obsessed with. I vaguely knew he like wrote a poem or two.
What we talk about when we talk about love, Raymond Carver.
Yep. But I didn't realize he had a full collection. So I found a book of his poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And then a poet I love, Dylan Thomas,
mm-hmm.
I found a collection of his short stories.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just really interesting to me to take a peek into the lesser known, lesser explored work of these two people that I've loved for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too far into either one of them. And I keep switching back and forth between the two. I love poetry, but I can only do like one or two at a time.
Yeah.
And then I need a break.
Yeah.
And I feel the same with short stories. Like, mm-hmm. if I just jump from one to the next one, mm-hmm. I kind of forget what each individual one was about. Mm-hmm. So I like going back and forth between these two voices that I really yeah. love in a new medium that I haven't really mm-hmm. experienced.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think, like, for me now, even though I'm not having this experience that you are reading them, they will be sort of twinned in my mind
yeah.
as your experience
yeah.
of having yeah, these two books not, at the same time. They're so different.
They're different, but in a way they make sense together. Mm. Like, their voices are kind of, like, of the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And this sort of, like, idea of masculinity that's becoming more old-fashioned, thank God,
yeah.
but is, like, kind of romantic to me in a way. Mm-hmm. And I just, I mean, it's really interesting to see Raymond Carver, who had such a troubled, weird life and mm-hmm. a lot of battles with alcoholism, to see this really soft,
yeah.
vulnerable side of him is mm-hmm. really beautiful in a way.
Mm. What are some of the poems that you have read so far? Or what do they touch on?
You know that feeling when you're on the spot?
Yeah.
And someone's like, what's your favorite
you
restaurant?
There.
And you're like, I've never eaten food in my whole life.
yeah. We can circle back.
yeah.
Let me think.
Do you have the collection titles so we can...
It's just called Collected
oh,
Poems
wow.
and Collected
okay.
Short Stories.
Cool.
Yeah.
That sounds like a great discovery, Book Barn. I used to go to this place called Biblio Barn
uh-huh.
in South Courtright, New York. Or South Courtright / Hobart. Which is called a book town, because there's like 5 bookstores to the 500 people. That
really?
There.
Wow.
Yeah.
It also kind of sounds like a version of Bart's Books in Ojai.
Oh.
Which was amazing, because they actually have bookshelves outside.
In Ojai, California?
Yeah. It's like a courtyard of books
mm-hmm.
outside, mm. and then there's just tons of books inside. Did you hit up any other places while you were book-related or not book-related in upstate? Or in, what was the trip, just like an R&R?
Yeah, my friend cool. just has a house up there, so we were there for the weekend.
Cool.
More locally, I don't know if you guys have ever gotten caught in this trap, but the bookstore just down the street over here on Flushing Ave, and they have a $1 bin outside. I can't walk past it without, and my apartment's right there.
Okay. I've walked by, but I've never gone in.
It's great.
I'm usually like on the other side of the street. Right. I'm like, don't cross, don't cross, don't cross.
And inside too, they have such a great collection of things, but my favorite section is mm-hmm. Classics in paperback.
Okay.
So they're super cheap. And it's like all those books I was supposed to read in high school, but I never did. And like, oh, maybe I should
right.
read Silas Marner or whatever. And I always get caught. It's like, I can't walk past it without popping in.
Did you get Silas Marner?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, it was good, turns out. Should have read it back then.
I confuse it with Jude the Obscure. But I think only one of them has 17 children.
Uh-huh. And,
you know. Where do you think they get all the books from?
I don't know. And the other thing I always wonder with bookstores and record stores is, how do they make their rent?
Right.
Like, what volume of books do they have to sell every single day to make... It just doesn't seem possible. Like,
mm-hmm.
I buy out of the dollar bin. I'm not helping them.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, what is their sale that they make every day
yeah.
that pays for that employee and the electricity and the space?
That's a good question.
It always confuses me. I'm always suspicious if it's a front.
Has that bookstore been there for as long as you've been in the neighborhood?
Yeah, I've okay. been here for 6 years, and that bookstore has always been here.
Interesting. Well, we
something
hope,
to mull yeah. over during the commercial break.
Yes, we hope whatever plan they've figured out, they keep going.
I don't care if it's a front, as long as
oh, I don't either.
Around. It's like
celebrated.
You know,
a front.
Like all those psychic readings for $5. How
yeah,
many do you have to do, like to keep rent in
there.
The East Village these days?
I know what that. Scam is about a little bit, I think.
Oh, okay.
We'll reveal it after the break, maybe.
We'll talk about it after the break. But I think we're also going to talk to Casey more about Bushwick Kitchen and the work that he does there and the delicious things that he makes, as well as his past lives in the opera world after this break. Remember, we are a member-supported radio network, Heritage Radio. Check out heritageradionetwork.org to support our show and the many, many others that are broadcast out of here in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn, every week.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. From papayas and samosas to reishi mushrooms, if it's something that sounds delicious, chances are you'll find the freshest, best version of it at Whole Foods Market. They have more than 400 stores across the country, so if you consider pizza its own food group, or just can't imagine when avocado toast wasn't a thing, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store near you. Whole Foods Market. Whatever makes you whole.
Welcome back. You are listening to Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair. We are joined in the studio by Casey Elsass. He is the founder of Bushwick Kitchen and also the author of one of my favorite short stack editions, Maple Syrup. So, well, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us. So based on some research that we've done, plus being friends, we've kind of unearthed that you've had a pretty unique trajectory to get where you are today, starting out doing various different things, working at the Met Opera for a long time, and then founding Bushwick Kitchen. Like,
yeah.
Tell us a little bit about A, B, C, D, E, and F, how you got there.
Skipping E, just right over E.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I wanted to live in New York. Mm-hmm. I knew that for sure. But career path was something I always felt unsure, too ambivalent about. And so I kind of landed in New York right after high school, needed to start making some money, just by chance got a job ushering at the opera. First 6 months, slept through everything. The second the downbeat hit, I was out.
During the show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, during the overture, not even the show.
So where do the ushers go during the show?
Some sit outside of the theater, okay, and then some sit inside the theater. Okay. I would always be inside the theater where it's nice and dark.
Snoozing
away. Okay. But one day I did actually stay awake and watched it and was like, this is actually incredible. I should pay attention. And anyways, I ended up ushering for 4 years. Absolutely fell in love with opera. Graduated college. Again, really had no clue what I wanted to do with my life, but had this huge knowledge of opera, mm-hmm, and some good connections in the house who helped me get out of ushering and into the administrative staff. So I stayed for another 5 years after that working in administration. And then one day a friend of mine, Morgan, approached me with this proposal that we should try this experiment to see if we could start a business from scratch in 30 days. And it was purely about the experiment of the 30 days.
Where did the 30 days come from?
Like, it was just a time frame.
Okay.
Just to see if in 1 month we could go from zero to launch. And
your own real life Kickstarter.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. And so I agreed to it. And then we didn't speak to each other for a while so we could have a really pure day one. So we weren't like texting and sharing ideas or doing any behind the scenes work. We sat down on day one.
You each started a separate business.
No, together.
Okay. But you didn't talk to each other. Well,
that's right.
Okay. Wow. So you didn't know what the business was going to be,
right,
until you sat down on day one.
Yes.
Wow.
And so we agreed, based on our skill sets, a food thing was probably going to be the most achievable in 30 days. Mm-hmm. And I had been making my own hot sauce for a while. So we kind of thought like, that might be something good, but then, like, you know, in the strict guidelines of 30 days, that's cheating because that's, mm-hmm, a pre-existing thing. So we went with spicy honey instead.
Mm.
And so in those 30 days, we found a honey supplier. I tried 1,000 different forms of the recipe, figured out how to make this in a commercial kitchen. Plus, we set up an LLC, set up a website, set up our e-commerce. And then on day 30... launched the site. But the problem, the mistake, good mistake, but mistake, was we had blogged about the experience of doing this in 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
So almost immediately this shot out of our friend group. And then it became a scenario where we were just going to do this experiment. Morgan was about to move to Europe. I was full-time employed at the Met. And then suddenly people are ordering from across the country. Retailers are writing in asking to carry the product. And I'm just sort of feeling like, oh, this isn't real. Like, go away.
No. So it worked too well.
It worked too well. Yeah. Yeah. We got outside of ourselves very quickly. And so it just sort of became the scenario where I was going to work all day and then doing a shift in a commercial kitchen from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m., dragging everything back to my apartment, sleeping for a couple hours, and then having to make the choice to either be late for work and go to the post office to mail out packages, or bring all the packages on the subway from Bushwick to the Upper West Side to go mail them during lunch. And after a couple weeks of that, I was just like, no, one of these things needs to go. And I was 27 and stupid and naive and left my salaried health insured job to do something that just seemed really fun, but also very scary. And in a lot of years of feeling like I had never quite touched on what I really wanted to be doing with my life, this felt like the closest thing to an answer I'd ever experienced. So I just jumped. And I think doing that without any sort of safety net, knowing now, if I knew then what I know now, I would have done things a little bit differently, saved up some more money, maybe grown the business a little bit larger before I took that kind of leap. But I think going at it with no other choice, like I'm not going to eat unless this is successful, was really valuable for me because I just had to make it something. And it's funny to look in that first year of our sales trajectory, the first couple months are like here and here and here. And then I leave my job and then the chart shoots up and up and up and up. And it just, you can see the like direct relation to the amount of work I was putting in to what was coming back out, which I think for me has been ultimately the most rewarding of everything. Is just, you guys probably feel this too, working for yourself, you just get the immediate validation of this is what my hard work did. And that's sometimes a harder thing when you're within the structure of a company to see that in action. But then when you go it alone, you just get that immediate, like, I did 80 hours and now look what happened.
Yeah. But hopefully you're not doing 80 hours.
Not anymore, no.
Another thing In some of the interviews that you've given, especially sort of with websites and magazines that have a little bit more of a business or startup focus, there is this question and then this idea of these sort of stories can be very romanticized at the beginning. But you speak so frankly about like, yeah, I can tell the story this way, but it was also fucking scary to have, you know, have a three-digit checking account and need certain things to change very quickly.
And that didn't, we had an enormous first year on the one product, just Bee's Knees Spicy Honey. We did $174,000 in revenue, which for a first year food business is a lot. But I wasn't making $174,000. I was making $19,000 that first year, I think. And then the second year, maybe $25,000. Like it was a very gradual approach back into, I left a very good salary at the Met. And it took me a while to get back to that salary. It wasn't, even though the product was successful overnight, it wasn't immediate that I was raking in dough. That's not how it goes in any business, I don't think.
And let's look back a little bit to, so one of the idea, you were making hot sauce. So, but then you couldn't use that idea as your business idea because it was cheating. Kind of.
Yeah, it came back later as our weak knees gochujang sriracha, which is not what I was making, but I knew I wanted to make a sriracha at some point.
So spicy honey. Like, how did that idea pop into either you or Morgan's head? Like, was it something you had seen before? Like, did you feel like it was something completely new? How did you come up with that idea? And what made you think that other people would like it?
I, at that point, I knew about Mike's Hot Honey. But it all was just kind of out there. It wasn't something I had really paid attention to. But I think approaching spicy honey was more of, we want to do a condiment. Something packaged, something easy to do in 30 days. We want to stay somewhere near hot sauce, since that's what I knew.
Hot sauce adjacent.
Hot sauce adjacent.
And actually, the initial idea was to do Bee's Knees Spicy Honey and Tree's Knees Spicy Maple at the same time as a duo. And pretty early on in those 30 days, maybe day five, we were talking to a friend about it and said, here's our plan, here's what we're thinking. And he actually gave me the best piece of advice there and also in life. And he just said, simplify. Don't do two products if you can just do one. Get to the root of what your idea is and do that. Don't do all this other stuff around it.
Mm-hmm.
And that really, really helped. And that's kind of been my ethos going forward with the packaging design, with our website, with how we roll out products. I just want to keep things straightforward and simple and not a thousand other things around it.
Mm-hmm.
So between the two of spicy honey and spicy maple, we felt like, well, there's already, at that point, there were 6 spicy honeys on the market, not one Brooklyn-based, other nationally, and they were all sort of small hometown brands.
Okay.
So again, we weren't trying to start a business, but we did want to take this 30 days as seriously as if we were starting a business. So we thought if we were actually going to start a business, that's what we would do. This is our market research. Here's an opportunity. There's no national leader in the category. Let's launch a spicy honey. And then we actually launched the spicy honey. That is now a national product. By mistake.
When did you introduce Tree's Knees, spicy maple, and then Weak Knees, your sriracha gochujang?
Those both came in the second year.
Okay.
So first year was just spicy honey. Year two, spicy maple joined, and then the sriracha.
Okay.
To sort of round out this idea of a trio of spicy products. And then year three, we expanded a little bit further on the honey. We have a salted honey and a Meyer lemon honey.
Mm.
And then with the maple syrups, we did a cinnamon maple, which seasonally switch, and it's a gingerbread maple in the winter, which honestly is my favorite product of all of them. It's so good. And then we do a coffee maple with Stumptown's Hairbender coffee infused in the maple syrup.
What is the most unusual thing you've put the syrup on that you enjoy?
Or the honey.
Yeah, or
the syrup goes on everything. I grew up in New Hampshire.
Okay.
So me and maple syrup go way back. I also wrote a book about maple syrup.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
In experimenting, that maple syrup went on pasta, everything. I just wanted to try it just to see if there was any kernel of an idea anywhere.
Okay. And was there anything surprising that worked or didn't work?
Well, something that I've loved since I was a kid, but a lot of people think is very weird. I love eggs with maple syrup. And
it's
in
like
the book,
when they touch on the plate.
Oh, it's right. So good. Okay. And so in the book, I took that to its extreme and did a maple poached egg,
whoa,
which I just think is like, oh my God, it's so good. But yeah, I loved when I was a kid and my pancake pool would just hit my scrambled eggs. And that was heaven to
pancake
me.
Pancake pool. I wanted to grow up in your house.
Yeah. I mean, my pancakes are just like croutons and soup when I eat them, basically.
So you go in.
I like that visual.
You go in on the maple syrup.
I love maple syrup,
yeah. Okay. Well, it seems like...
Yeah. I actually, on my desk at work, I keep a bottle of our maple syrup and just sip on it throughout the day.
Really?
I love maple syrup.
You're your company's best spokesperson, without a doubt.
Well, are there still parts of your past life, especially since you spent so much time, once you learned to love opera as part of the Met Opera, that still, whether it's opera music itself or if you go see productions, is that still a part of your life now that you are a food entrepreneur?
Big time, big time. Yeah, well, the entire time I've lived in New York, I've been in New York 13 years now. And starting from when I was an usher to present, I have never missed an opening night at the Met.
Oh, wow.
And even if I leave New York one day, I think I will still come back every year to experience opening night at the Met. It's just, I mean, I experienced it the first time as an usher, and it was just so weird and exciting to me. And I still get that feeling every time, even if it's an opera I don't particularly care for, just being there for opening night of the opera feels so cool. Like something I never thought I would be experiencing. Just so like foreign and wonderful in a way. But then throughout the year too, every year I sort of look at the calendar, pick the operas and the singers that I really want to see. And I'd say I probably go, at this point I've seen most of the reps several times. So I don't, unless it's a singer I really want to see, I don't really go back. But I probably go to 5 or 6 operas a year. And, Yeah, like coming up, I'm seeing Elektra, a Strauss opera.
Cool.
Which I've seen 100 times, but the soprano Christine Gorky, who is just like the savior of dramatic sopranos, is singing the title role, and she's incredible. She is really incredible. I think she has the kind of voice that someone who knew nothing about opera could go see her sing and understand that, like, that is something special.
Oh, wow.
She is so loud. It's insane.
Who are some of your favorite composers or pieces that you could see again and again? We were chatting a little bit before the show, and you may have said something controversial about someone you're not that into.
Yeah. Well, on the positive side first, the opera that kept me awake for the very first time.
Oh, wow. Okay,
yes,
here we go.
Was a dress rehearsal of Wagner's Parsifal.
Mm.
And it was, this was the first time I'd ever experienced this. I've only experienced it a couple more times since. But the music caught me in such a way that when the lights came up for intermission, I jumped because I forgot that I was sitting somewhere. Mm-hmm. I just was so transported with what was going on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, that was a very obvious indication that that's the kind of music I probably like in opera.
Yeah.
And that's been true. I love Wagner. I've seen The Ring Cycle seven or eight times. And that's 4 separate operas that are each about, the first one's 2.5 hours, but the next 3 are about 5 hours each. So it's
and
a
you've
big,
seen the entire Ring
the entire
cycle. It's not like you're seeing like parts 1 and 2 and you're like, ah, this season I didn't like it.
I've done that too, but I've seen the complete cycle
7 or 8 times.
Yeah. So I love Wagner. I love Strauss. Any of the really big, heavy. I love later Verdi, where he gets into a lot of heavy orchestration and a lot of choral music. But what I did say earlier, which is a very controversial opinion in opera and classical music, I hate Mozart. I just really, I can't click into it. I think part of the problem is the Met does a lot of Mozart every year. So I've had to sit through a lot of poorly cast, not great sung Mozart. Like, I can definitely appreciate like the recording of Renee Fleming from 1998 singing The Countess in La Nozze di Figaro. That's a transcendent moment on opera. But in general, it just bores me to tears. I can get into a lot of bel canto, but some of that even gets a little too floaty for me. But Mozart is just like, the point of Mozart is very spare orchestration, so it's really exposed, beautiful vocal lines. And I just want thunder and lightning. It's not for me.
More timpani.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but if Figaro is the opening night choice, you're still going to
It was
be there.
A couple of years ago. And
I remember seeing the ads for it.
Yeah. And, you know, that production I thought was actually very funny and clever and told the story in a really engaging way. So that's what clicked in for me.
Mm.
Not so much the music. I'm sick of those arias.
Mm. Do music and cooking mix for you at all? Like
Definitely.
In the commercial kitchen or where you're prepping something in your office?
Yeah, yeah. So we...
Do you listen to other music besides opera?
Oh my God, yeah.
What do you listen to while you're cooking?
My favorite thing when I'm cooking, especially if it's at the end of a long day and I kind of need that like boost of energy, I love to just put on the greatest hits of the Kinks. That always gets me moving, gets me in the mood. And definitely gets my creative juices flowing.
Mm.
If it's more of like a Saturday.
Also a lot of thunder and lightning.
Yeah.
I'm like invisibly air drumming over the radio. No one can see me, but.
If it's more of like a Saturday afternoon, like I want to bake some bread kind of feeling, I've got this playlist on my Spotify called Bake Bread Sing Tunes, and it's all kind of like 60s folk and rock music.
Mm.
Peter, Paul, and Mary, Creedence Clearwater, that kind of stuff.
Is this a public playlist?
Yeah.
Oh.
Actually, yeah, it is.
I love seeing what people name their playlists.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know if any of mine are public, but the names are embarrassing.
Well, luckily for us, we got a recommendation for a playlist kind of towards the end of our show. So thanks for slipping that in, Casey.
Yeah.
We'll definitely be searching for that on Spotify. I don't know if I'll be baking bread, but I'll be trying to cook. Trying to cook something.
Do you have a sort of recommendation, like you're baking bread, you're listening to Peter, Paul, and Mary, you're pairing your condiments with it. Is there sort of an ideal or sort of something that you're really into right now? Because I'm one of those people that can like listen to the same song again and again mm-hmm. and eat the same thing again and again to the criticism of some of my loved ones. And they're like, no, not again.
Yeah, so when I'm baking bread, lately I've loved playing around with using honey in the bread. It really changes the flavor and the texture of the dough in a really cool way that I've enjoyed exploring. So I love baking with the honey to that playlist. I do actually listen to that playlist every time I bake bread.
Can't wait to search this.
It's maybe like a Pavlovian response at this point that like that means it's time to bake bread now.
Which honey do you use?
Just regular honey in the dough. But then my favorite is once it's done, I try to wait as long as I can before slicing into it, which is, I think, the hardest thing in the world. But slicing into it, a big slather of butter, and then the salted honey on top is just my favorite thing.
I had your salted honey on cornbread this morning.
Oh, yeah.
It was good.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Well, nothing is better to me than envisioning both of you eating your honeyed snacks. So I think maybe we unfortunately have to leave it there for today. So we can end on a very sweet note. And maybe next time we all hang out, I'll have something that I'm putting honey on. I haven't been using it that much lately, but I'm feeling inspired.
Go for cheese.
Okay.
Explore it on some cheese.
I can do that.
Any maple recommendations?
Everything.
Everything. Everything. You're the all-out egg poacher.
No, maple on ice cream is my favorite. Especially the coffee maple on chocolate ice cream is just
coffee,
what everything should be. Coffee
maple on chocolate ice cream. Ooh. Okay. We can get into that.
We'll report back. For our listeners who want to find you on the internet and buy your products and learn more about your playlists, etc., how do we find you?
Bushwickkitchen.com.
Mm-hmm.
Instagram is Bushwick_kitchen.
Great.
And Spotify, Casey L. Sass. I think all my playlists are public, so go nuts.
Getting on there. Yes. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Casey, sharing so much about everything, your recommendations, your business, and about you.
Yeah, thanks. This was fun.
Thanks for bringing the sweetness and the heatness.
She's been probably waiting all day to say that.
I just came up with that right now. Can you tell I'm a writer?
Yes.
JK. I'm a radio host, and so are you. And this is Recommended Reading. I'm Kim.
I'm Amanda.
We are the co-directors of Food Book Fair, the co-hosts of Recommended Reading. We've been on this afternoon with Casey Alsass. Thank you, Casey.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Ever wonder what kind of podcast Julia Child would have made? Probably would have been one where she introduced you to all of her latest discoveries and favorite people. And that's exactly the tradition we're following on Inside Julia's Kitchen, the podcast of the Julia Child Foundation for Gastronomy and the Culinary Arts. Join me, Todd Shulkin, your host, and the Foundation's Executive Director, as I bring you inside the Foundation's world to meet the bright lights of today's food universe, just as Julia used to do from her own famous kitchen. New episodes air on Heritage Radio Network Wednesdays at noon Eastern. Listen in.